present The Lady in the Lake by Raymond Chandler, dramatized in three parts by Bill Morrison, starring Ed Bishop as Philip Marlowe. The Lady in the Lake, Part 2. California, 1943.
Some wives aren't faithful stay-at-homes. Therese Kingsley's wife, Crystal, had gone up to stay at their cabin on Little Fawn Lake. He didn't much care when he got a telegram saying she'd run off with a fellow called Lavery, until he met Lavery in the street. He hired me to find her. I went up to the lake and found two wives missing, Crystal and the caretaker's wife, Muriel. The caretaker claimed they'd both run off because he'd had a fling with Crystal. Then I found the body. It had been in the lake a long time, but he identified the body as his wife, Muriel. Then I was told that a tough cop from L.A. called DeSoto had been up 6 weeks before showing a photograph of Muriel around town. Only he said her name was Mildred Haviland. Nobody liked his manner, so nobody told him where to find her. Now, one blonde was dead and one was missing. Lavery had met a blonde at a hotel below the lake. Things were not what they seemed. The L.A. police had no record of a cop called DeSoto. Lavery knew more than he was telling, and I thought I might bounce it out of him, so I went back to his house. When I got there, the door was open. Inside was a strange-looking woman wearing too much makeup with brown hair and a purple hat. She also had a gun, pointed at me. I kept looking at the gun and not screaming.
All I wanted was my rent. He was always a good, tidy, careful tenant. I just didn't want him to get too far behind in the rent.
How far behind is he?
3 months, $240. That's very reasonable, you know, for a place like this. He promised me a check this morning over the telephone.
And you are the owner?
Who did you think I was?
I thought you might be the owner.
I'm Mrs. Fallbrook.
How do you do?
Stand still.
Ma'am.
Who are you, if I may inquire?
I just came about the car payment.
Is he behind with those payments, too? Oh, it's easier for you. You can take the car back. It takes time and money to evict a tenant. And I walked over here, too, to save my tires for the government. Oh, will you take this gun, please? It's put oil on my glove.
Thanks. I'll take it.
It's funny. I found it on the stairs. Has it been fired?
Any reason why it should?
People do.
Is Mr. Lavery not home?
No, I don't think that's very nice of him. He promised me a check.
Mrs. Fallbrook, let's not kid around anymore, huh? Not that I don't love it. This gun is empty. It has been fired. You didn't shoot him, did you, on account of the rent?
What a perfectly horrid suggestion.
Did you look around?
I just called out.
Let's look around.
This is my house.
Is it your gun?
I found it on the stairs.
That's your story.
Yeah.
I don't have to get stuck with it.
I'll thank you to leave.
You shouldn't have let me find out the gun was empty.
How dare you?
Up to then, you held all the cards.
How dare you be so insulting?
I'm not even trying.
I won't stay in this house another moment with you.
Something is all wrong with this scene. Lavery! Lavery! Chris Lavery hadn't slept alone. There was a pair of sheer black pajamas flung on the bed, makeup on the dressing table, women's clothes in the closet, including a black and white tailored suit, mostly white. The bathroom door was locked, so I opened it and smelt that pungent smell. There were two bullet holes in the plaster by the window, and one in the frosted glass, and two holes in Lavery where he lay in the bottom of the shower. I touched him. He couldn't have been colder or stiffer. Back in the bedroom, I found a woman's handkerchief under the pillow. It was initialed A.F. Adrienne Fromset? I took it with me. I found nothing else to interest me. Outside, it was quiet, sunny, and calm. It's only Marlowe finding another body. Murderer Day Marlowe, they call him. A nice enough fellow in his ingenious sort of way. With a client to protect. Therese Kingsley.
Marlowe, over here.
Mr. Kingsley.
Yes, sit down, Marlowe. keep your voice down. The library in this club is strictly for after-luncheon naps. Now, what's the problem? When I hired you, it was to save me trouble, not to add to what I already had. You made me break an important engagement.
She shot him.
What?
Lavery had a woman with him last night. This morning, she shot him in the bathroom.
My God, why in the bathroom?
Keep your own voice down. Why not?
Look, are you sure it was a woman?
No. You might have shot him.
I'm a civilized man.
Does your wife own a gun?
Why, yes, but... Oh, my God. It's a small automatic.
Is this it?
Sorry, sir.
Oh, it's like it. I don't remember the serial number.
I was hoping you wouldn't. It would have worried me very much if you had.
Oh, that bastard Lavery. I suppose he ditched her, and she couldn't stand it.
Well, the motive wasn't enough for you on account of you're a civilized man, but it was enough for her.
Oh, women are more impetuous than men.
I need a better motive.
Marlowe, this gun is registered to Crystal. Now, we can't let the police have it.
The landlady was there, looking for the rent. She may tell them.
Will she?
She found only the gun, not a body. She may just forget the whole thing. She was an odd dame.
We have to take the chance. I'll make it worth your while.
I can't cover up a murder, even for a $5 bonus.
I was thinking of 500.
Just what did you expect to buy with it?
Oh, I can't believe Crystal did this. Is there any other evidence that she was there?
A black and white suit like the one she was said to be wearing in San Bernardino. Maybe fingerprints. What kind of perfume did she use?
Guillermo Regal, of course. The champagne of perfumes.
The bedroom reeks of it.
Reeks? We get $30 an ounce for it.
Smelled more like $3 a gallon.
Marlowe, I hired you to protect me and my wife if she needed it.
Judging by the cop I met down there, they'll just pick the first head they see and start swinging their blackjacks. Hers will be the first head.
Oh, God. It's hard to believe she could be so dumb. Leave so much evidence.
Well, you said she was impetuous, reckless, foolish. It's a crime of passion. All I can do is go down there, replace the gun, and call the law. At worst, they prove she killed her. At best, they'll find her a lot quicker than I can and let me use my energies to prove she didn't. Are you game for that?
Prove it, and the 500 is yours.
Okay. How well did your secretary, Miss Fromsett, know Lavery?
What's all this to do with her?
You tell me.
Oh, he worked for us. She knew him. Rather well then, not now.
Are you in love with her?
Oh, I'd marry her tomorrow if I could.
Well, you're honest about it. Gives you a lot of motives.
She knew all those people. Dr. Almore, Almore's wife.
I'll have to talk to her. If you hear from the cops, you don't know Lavery is dead. You didn't talk to me. They must think I've just discovered him when I call in. Don't fall into any traps.
You can trust me. I can handle it.
Then we'll go. I can see why they call this place the Athletic Club.
Miss Fromm said, do you wear the firm's perfume?
Yes. If you want to know, I detest wearing it in the office, but Duress makes me.
Did he tell you why he hired me?
Yes. If you knew what he has suffered from that wife of his... Perhaps I ought to leave that out. Duress is a great person.
Do you know the Almores?
I met Mrs. Almore a couple of times.
At Lavery's house?
I don't think that's any of your business.
I think it is.
Yes, at his house. But Mrs. Almore's dead. She committed suicide 18 months ago.
Any doubt about that?
Well, have you any particular reason for asking these questions?
Almore was nervous enough to put a plainclothes cop on me for sitting outside his door. And the cop thought it smart to say that the last fellow who tried to put the bite on ended up on the road gang. If you can tell me why, I'll have a reason.
At that time when I knew Chris, he threw a party, very mixed.
Florence Almore was there. She was one of those slinky, glittering females who laugh too much. A man was ribbing her about her husband's practice, how he was one of those doctors who ran around all night with a case of loaded hypodermic needles to keep the local fast set from having pink elephants for breakfast. She said she didn't care how he got his money so long as he got plenty. Then somebody asked her how he got hold of so much dope without underworld contacts. She got mad, made a scene. A few weeks later, Chris, coming home late at night, found her dead in a closed garage with car engine running. It was hushed up in the papers.
Was it suicide?
She made another scene at Lou Condy's club, so the gossip said.
Condy would be the right connection?
Yes, Condy called the doctor. He gave her a needle to quieten her, then went on his rounds. Condy took her home, and she was put to bed by the doctor's nurse. She had to be carried there. But the same night, she got up and walked down to the garage, and then there was a cover-up.
Meaning Almore finished her off? To protect himself?
Her parents hired a private detective. But he got arrested for drunk driving.
And ended up on the road gang. Did Lavery know all this?
I'd like to think blackmail was one of the nasty little tricks that Chris didn't quite run to. I think that's all I can tell you, Mr. Marlowe.
Recognize this handkerchief?
The initials happen to be the same as mine.
I found it in Lavery's bed today.
So you're going to be nasty after all.
Is it yours?
Yes. But I must have dropped it there a long time ago. He probably lent it to another woman. Or several other women.
That's not a nice thing to say about a dead man.
Chris. Chris is dead.
Shot by the woman who spent the night there.
When?
This morning, when he got up.
He always got up late. I was here at 8:30.
I didn't think you shot him.
Women make such ghastly mistakes about men. Poor, selfish, cheap, nasty, handsome, treacherous guy. Dead and cold and dumb. Do the police know? Does Dorace know about this handkerchief?
No. Only us and whoever put it there. You're not the kind of a girl who leaves her hanky under a man's pillow. You have too much dignity.
Nice of you to think so.
You can trust me. Well, I'd better go off now and discover the body.
I'm Captain Weber. This is Lieutenant DeGarmo.
So, you're a private eye from L.A., Marlowe. That means everything will be all balled up. You know this Lavery guy? On to him for something?
Working on him a little.
Who handled the gun?
I did.
All balled up. Didn't you know any better?
When I handled it, I didn't know there was a crime. I found it on the stairs.
He found it. On the stairs. Get this straight, Marlowe. You're from the big town. You think you're tough, wise. Don't worry, we can handle you. There's no political tug of war, not down here, not in Bay City. Don't worry about us.
Look, Chief, Lavery was a chaser. I mean, the whole setup indicates a dame. Private eyes do divorce stuff. Suppose we let him tie into this, instead of trying to scare him.
If I'm scaring him, I don't see any sign of it. Talk to him, DeGarmo. I'll go upstairs and see what the deputy coroner's got.
Am I supposed to tell about our conversation yesterday, DeGarmo? Or was that a private transaction?
Talk about it all you like. I was protecting a citizen. It's my job.
Dr. Almore.
You said you didn't know him.
That was yesterday. Before I knew the story that was wrapped up and hidden on the back of the shelf. That Lavery found Mrs. Almore and might have been into blackmail, which would be a motive for his murder. Anything in the idea that Almore murdered his wife and had enough pull with someone to get it fixed?
Say that again.
No, you might miss.
Anytime you talk like that to a cop, you know what you got coming. You'll wake up in an alley with a cat's looking at you.
I'll remember that.
Hey, you two. What's going on here?
Welcome.
Just making friends.
Okay. Now, Marlowe, tell me what you found here and why. And don't leave anything out.
The second drink out of the office bottle didn't do me any more good than the first. The third wasn't any improvement. The early neon lights cast a glow over my office. By now, Weber would have seen Kingsley and a general alarm would be out for his wife. All cut and dried. A nasty affair between two rather nasty people. Too much loving, too much drinking, too much proximity, ending in a savage hatred, a murderous impulse, and death. I thought it was too simple. I opened my mail. There was a note from Adrian Fromset, delivered by hand. If it was any help, she said, here was the address of Florence Almore's parents. I washed my hands and bathed my face in cold water. The flush was gone from the left cheek, but it looked a little swollen. I looked at the gray in my hair. There was getting to be plenty of gray in it. The face under the hair had a sick look. I didn't like the face at all. I went back to the desk and sat very still and listened to the evening grow quiet outside the open windows. And very slowly, I grew quiet with it. Then I went to talk to two old people who thought their daughter had been murdered, but who hadn't been able to find out a thing about it. The cops in Bay City had not exactly been cooperative. They told me a story of a doctor who made his money out of dispensing dope to people living on the raw edge of nervous collapse, not caring what kind of hopeless addicts they might become, so long as he got paid. How he was having an affair with his nurse. How, after his wife died, they hired a private detective called Tally, who was given a doped drink in a bar while he was drinking with a cop, and how a police car was waiting for him as soon as he drove away. Two old people, with a wild, dead daughter, sitting there, poisoning their minds with suspicions and hate, and no proof. As I was leaving, I thought to ask them the name of Almore's nurse, the one who had put their daughter to bed the night she died. They told me the nurse's name was Mildred. Mildred Haviland. Good evening, ma'am. Is Mr. Tally in?
Who wants him?
Are you Mrs. Tally?
I can't pay, mister.
I just want to talk to your husband. I got something for him.
That sounds familiar. He had something, too, once.
He can have it again. If he plays his cards right.
If that's what it takes, you can scratch him off right now. He won't be here again. I'm tired. I'm so damn tired. Beat it, mister.
Would a little money help?
Smell it. Come in here, mister. Come in and smell it. Smell the cigar smoke. They've been here 2 hours, asking and waiting. I'm tired. Tired of all cops. Tired.
Mrs. Tally,
I have nothing to tell you. I wouldn't tell you if I had. I live here in Bay City, mister, if you call it living. Anyway, it's the nearest I can get to living. I want a little peace and quiet. Go away, or I'll start yelling my head off now.
All right, Mrs. Tally, look, I'll leave you a card. Call me if you change your mind, please. On the gas, but the other car was gaining on me. I was on the wrong side of town, factories and junkyards. I didn't care about getting away. I wanted to get back to houses and people who might see and remember what was going to happen. I didn't make it. They pulled alongside and then cut in.
Okay, mister. Out of that car. Why don't you know a police siren when you hear one? Out. Let me see your driver's license. Marlowe. Seamus. You think of that, Cooney.
Oh, is that all? Guess I won't need this gun. Guess I can handle this with my little flippers. Smell the bastard's breath.
Breathe. Well, he ain't staggering. I gotta admit that.
It's a cold night. Buy the boy a drink from this, Dodge.
Suppose I don't want a drink.
Then we might think you wanted footprints on your stomach.
Here's the bottle. Have a drink.
You can't work the same gag all the time, boys. You insist I drink this?
Yeah. Why, you bastard! Hold it, Marlowe. Stay on the ground, Peeper.
Jesus. I'm bleeding. I'm bleeding. This is my blood. Let me at him.
Now take it easy, Cooney. We've got what we want.
Oh, just give me 1 minute with him. I gotta see more blood. I gotta see his blood.
Leave him. We got enough. You drive his car.
I'll tear every goddamn fender off it. Get up.
Marlowe. You're coming with me. You shouldn't have hit that police officer.
He attacked me. I was defending myself.
Resisting arrest. And HBD.
HBD?
Been drinking. Plenty got spins on you.
I thought they'd clean this town up so that a decent man could walk around tonight without wearing a bulletproof vest.
Not too clean. Might scare away a dirty dollar.
Talk like that, you might lose your union card.
You think this is my idea of a good time? What the hell? I'll be in the army in 2 weeks. Now let's move. We got a new jail here. And you like it.
It was new. In the nice new city hall in nice Bay City. It was 9:44. Time to go home and get your slippers on and play over a game of chess with a tall, cool drink. Time to be a human being. A man with nothing to do but rest and rebuild the brain for tomorrow. A cop came along and gave me the hard stare which says, I'm a cop, brother. I'm tough. Watch your step or we'll fix you so you won't crawl out on your hands and knees. Let's go, brother, and let's not forget. We do what we like with punks like you. We're tough.
DeGarmo here has brought me the report on you, Marlowe. Seems you asked for trouble and you got it. Or are my men lying, as usual?
Chief.
Well, Marlowe?
It's going to take a little frank talk to explain, Captain Weber.
I kind of specialize in frank talk.
Your men were waiting for me at George Talley's house. Talley used to be a private eye down here. DeGarmo knows why I wanted to see him, don't you, DeGarmo?
Maybe.
You're a stupid man, DeGarmo. Everything you do is stupid. You had to get tough outside Almore's house when there was nothing to get tough about. You made me curious.
What has this to do with Almore?
Talley worked on the Almore case until he got pinched for HBD and driving.
The Almore case was before I came here. I don't know who stuck the first knife into Julius Caesar either. Make your point.
DeGarmo knows about the case. I was afraid the same thing might happen to me tonight.
DeGarmo, did you get made chief of police today? You might have let me in on it. Did you put Cooney and Dobbs over there?
That was nothing. We were kidding. I don't see why we have to put up with these snoopers coming into town and stirring up a lot of dead leaves.
I think you need a little air. Would you please take it? Now, Lieutenant?
Captain, you're playing this wrong.
Let me decide. Drift.
All right.
You weren't booked, Marlowe. You're free to go. You want to file charges?
Life's too short for me to be filing charges of assault against the police.
Police business is a hell of a problem. It's a good deal like politics. It asks for the highest type of men, and there's nothing in it to attract the highest type of men. So we have to work with what we get. And we get things like this.
I've always known that.
I suppose some people think we're just a bunch of crooks. I suppose they think a fella kills his wife and then calls me up and says, Hi, Cap, I got a little number down here cluttering up the front room and I got 500 bucks that are not working. And I say, I'll be right down with a hearse. What did you want to see Talley for?
He had a line on Florence Almore's death.
Talley was nothing, a cheap blackmailer. I'll tell you what he had. A slipper. Brand new.
Hey, I'm beginning to get it. The walk from the house to the garage is rough concrete. If a slipper on the body had never been scuffed, then she was carried. Who was in charge of the investigation?
I think you know.
Huh. When DeGarmo got there, was the slipper missing?
Not according to the police report. We only have Talley's word he took it off the body. He could have stolen the slipper from the house. I can't prove anything.
Unless the nurse was involved.
Why the hell would she?
She was having an affair with the doctor.
She's been gone from around here since then.
Now that brings me to a real basic coincidence. A woman named Muriel Chess was found drowned in a mountain lake yesterday. Only you wouldn't know her as Muriel Chess, but as Mildred Haviland.
The nurse?
She may have been scared into leaving town. Now, this is the coincidence. She married a guy who looked after a lake property owned by a man, Kingsley, whose wife was intimate with Lavery. And Lavery could have been blackmailing Elmore.
It's one hell of a coincidence.
It's fundamental. Everything else flows from it.
How can you be sure this lady in the lake was the nurse?
A few weeks ago, a tough guy was up there showing a photo around of Mildred Haviland. He said he was an L.A. cop, but his description would fit DeGarmo. Nobody liked his manner, so they didn't tell him anything. But they told the girl, Muriel, and she reacted scared. Also, a gold anklet was hidden in the chest cabin. It had a heart on it, engraved, to Mildred, June 28, 1938, with all my love, Al.
Al. Al DeGarmo.
What?
Al was married to Mildred Haviland. She led him a dance. A lot of what seems bad in him is a result of it.
I'm beginning to see things I didn't know existed.
She had her way with the men. She could make them crawl over her shoes. She divorced DeGarmo, but that didn't end it for him.
Does he know she's dead?
I don't know. But if you think he went up there to hurt her, you're as wet as a bar towel.
I never thought that. Whoever killed her knew the country up there. But it was somebody out of her past.
Marlowe, this is all between us. I'd like you to keep it that way.
Now, I can't promise you. I'm being paid to try to prove that Crystal Kingsley did not shoot Lavery and that she has disappeared because she was frightened. I think it's legitimate to try.
If you can find proof that'll stand up in court. Till then, I can't help you try to put something on one of my boys.
You can find Crystal Kingsley.
That, you can be sure, we'll try.
That was part two of The Lady in the Lake by Raymond Chandler, dramatized for radio by Bill Morrison, with Ed Bishop as Philip Marlowe. Production for the BBC was by John Tiedemann.